Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
It's February sweeps and we are here with Pottercast number 137. Hey guys,
jeez.
Did we do February sweeps? What do we do for February sweeps?
I don't know,
that
was February sweeps.
Oh, television.
Should be.
And not really much this year, hardly any new shows left.
Hey man, Lost is back, at least there's 4 episodes of that, so that's not...
I think they had like 8 in the can or something.
Yeah, but we're only going to get a little bit.
And then he'll do the rest in May, right?
No, probably.
Are they seriously going to do that?
I don't think
so. Oh. Burn.
We should start making a podcast February Sweeps month. This should be the month where we all fight, break up, somebody gets abducted,
okay.
The terrorists come and get us, and then aliens abduct John.
Yeah.
They haven't already?
All this month.
This has happened previously.
We knew that about you.
Getting so used to it.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, welcome. It's Pottercast 137. I'm Melissa. I'm here with Sue and John, and we're joined today by a very special guest, Lisa. She is known as Quest Author on our site and on our forums. She's the author of how many books now?
Well, there are 3 that are out right now. The 4th, which is Charm Quest, will be out within the next 2 weeks.
Ooh, cool.
Well, geez, perfect timing.
I know. I got the finished book cover yesterday, and it's absolutely glorious, so I'm very, very happy.
And how many have you written?
This is where it gets a little embarrassing. I have the rough drafts for 20 in the Quest series.
Wow.
And,
wow.
And a 4 drafts for a companion series, which are the Defenders of the Land. So,
I am still, like faint and sweaty from 1, so I don't understand how you did this. So we'll talk about all that in 1 minute. Right now, we're going to hear from Sue about what is going on in the Harry Potter news this week.
Awesome. There are news. We have news about the directorship of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. David Heyman, producer, says that Guillermo del Toro is not really in the running, and that makes sense because he's now going to be helming the Hobbit film, so he can't take it on and do the Deathly Hallows movie. So that was kind of cool news.
Do you know, I'd never seen a picture of Guillermo del Toro. I'd only seen Pan's Labyrinth, and I expected him to be a lot different looking than he was when I saw the picture associated with this article. I expected him to be, like, dark and brooding and kind of, you know.
No!
He looks like a general grade-A geek.
He does, which is so great. That's nothing wrong with that.
No, you're right.
No, it's fantastic. I just, it's just your mind does these things, you know?
Yeah. You know,
cool,
I think he would have did a good job. I like Pan's Labyrinth. I like, you know, I mean, his grandiosity element, you know, would have been really good. I think so from a visual point of view, he would have been good, but.
He would have had so much fun with that bow.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he would.
Ooh.
But,
don't see Pan's Labyrinth if you've just eaten.
But Mr. Del Toro is not going to do it. So, I mean, hopefully we'll hear soon. I mean, I just think that they need to soon, but.
Yeah. I mean, okay, there's been some rumors going around. The set visit was this week. A bunch of fan sites went to the set, along with other media. This happens for every film. We're under strict embargo. If I say anything, we'll be shot. But, they're in the middle of filming one movie. This is around the time where we start hearing things about the next. But Stephen Clovis, who's writing the 7th film, is on strike.
Right.
So they can't even speak to him. So unless the strike ends soon, it's a non-issue. Pencils down means pencils down. You're not supposed to even be doodling it in your...
I mean, I hope this isn't going to lead to a whole, you know, Harry Potter fans for the writers campaign. If they hold up our movie too long, they can't have our trio aging disproportionately.
I mean, if you mess with all of Hollywood, you start screwing around with the Harry Potter fans, there's problems.
I mean, yeah, totally. I mean, we have bigger numbers than anything.
Well, God forbid they get a new screenwriter. Sorry.
They're all going to be in the guild.
Not all of them.
No, but you can't. If the Harry Potter films went anything non-union, there'd be strikes of a whole other sort.
Yeah.
You know, and then, oh, God, and whoever was that writer would be killing the rest of his career. And, you know, so, but, you know, on the question of whether the Deathly Hallows will be split into two, we've been talking about it nonstop here. We all seem to be of the opinion that it's probably going to happen. I'm certainly not unconvinced of that now.
I'm ready for it. Are you kidding me? That's awesome. I just wonder how close they'll be released to each other.
They could call it.
Questions around that, huh?
Yeah, and what they'll call it. Just Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows Part 1? Or, you know, Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows, and, like, Harry Potter and...
The Battle of Hogwarts.
The duel with Voldemort something?
Well, here's the thing.
Ah, that'd be cool. How about Harry Potter and the Knights of Hogwarts for the
I want to volunteer, man. If they would just allow American old people like me to be in it, I would so volunteer. I just want to throw a snorkel off, you know?
How funny would it be if Joe wrote in the last book how, you know, at some point, like, you know, three older American people show up.
Randomly show up.
And then they do something, like they're tourists or something, but they have, like, a really big role to play.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's time to cast Americans.
Oh, my God.
Here we go.
You know the fanfic people are going to go nuts over that.
They would freak.
That
would have been too funny.
The casting call.
Could you imagine, like, the whole country shows up in droves?
It's the greatest thing. Be awesome. But you could be
12 to 60-year-olds.
John, it would be so cool though if they could cash you as, like, you know, Dalish just doubled or something, you know?
Could you imagine though if they had, like, a Dalish, you know, like, into the pensive, like, his history kind of flashback moment, and there's a younger Dalish there, and I'm like, well, if you need a younger Dalish,
I'm your guy.
This
right?
guy over here. I'm right over here. So keep that in mind, Clovis. You've done some crazy things before. This wouldn't be off the wall.
Oh, I'm sure they're just waiting, sure. John.
Well, filming is ongoing for Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, and we saw new photos and new video this time at Gloucester Cathedral. And so there was one young man they talked to, like, the extras that are going to be cast, and he said he was in Hufflepuff and he was sad, but I was like, you know, come on, take pride in that. But all the kids are getting, there's going to be like 174 extras of these students from the Indiana, which is pretty, that's a lot of students, I thought.
That's a tremendous amount of students.
But it kind of looks like they're filming the scene where, like, the outdoor, like, they're putting up platforms like it could be outdoor, like the courtyard scene. Like, well, maybe it's, like we talked about last week, well, maybe it's where Dumbledore's going to fall, or I don't know.
Or the battle, or...
Yeah.
What would they be doing at Gloucester? I'm free to opine about this because we didn't find this out. So what could they be doing at Gloucester? We're still trying to figure this out. Have we had any email from anybody who thinks they know what the Gloucester filming would be?
No. No.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything.
Nothing.
Either.
It was just surprising because usually, I mean, there's been a lot of kids that are saying, oh, my friends are in it and stuff, but no one's saying what's going to happen there, which is interesting. So,
well,
maybe
someone needs to fess up.
Yeah, I think so.
Come on.
You could sound it anonymously. It's okay.
Yeah, but
maybe they have like some kind of memorial service for Dumbledore instead of like the funeral how it was written outside at the tomb.
By the lake.
Maybe.
I know, but that filming is going to take place next week in February for sure. So, well, I'm sure we have a lot of people who have said that they're going to go there and take pictures and report. So stay tuned. We'll have them up as soon as we can. Which is good.
And I'm trying to think about this now. How many scenes in any of the movies so far have there been a whole lot of people on one of the outdoor locations? Like a real outdoor location, not something like that that wasn't, you know, one of the castles, wasn't a... I guess when they brought everybody from the train station in Phoenix, that was off somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And there was a whole bunch of them.
Maybe they're changing how people sit around for Quidditch. Maybe it's not going to be like we've seen it.
Oh, that could be.
Oh, but those stands are so iconic.
Are they, though? We haven't seen them since movie 3.
We've all forgotten what they look like. It's been so long since we've seen Quidditch.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, they've remodeled the castle how many times?
They've remodeled Dumbledore.
Fair point.
This is true.
But the students are talking about being fitted for their school robes, so that kind of indicates that this is a classroom situation or something to do with the school.
I don't know. I almost think it's some sort of memorial for Dumbledore, some sort of impact, you know, the students assembling in the courtyard and having some sort of, I don't know, choir singing or something, which will make everybody cry.
Please with frogs.
Yeah, don't make the frogs come back. No.
Please, no frogs. No.
Not choir singing if there are no frogs.
Yeah.
You know, what's really interesting, though, about this movie that I'm anxious about, and we just heard a little bit from Mr. Alan Rickman when he was recently at Sundance, and he said he's still refusing to discuss his role as Snape because he doesn't want to ruin it. Isn't that amazing?
Dude, cat out of the bag. Cat bag out.
Well, I mean, he probably has this thing with Warner Brothers. I mean, just like when the whole business for Phoenix was coming out, you know, when that was about ready to come out, and, you know, they asked us not to talk about Sirius dying too much. Like,
that
on,
was
everybody
funny.
Knows it, but...
Because with our audience specifically, there's just... That was... It was silly. We kept having to not say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That thing there. Certainly nobody dies. That thing that happens.
But I'm so anticipating that scene, that final part of the book. I just think so much rides on him, you know, and Dan is Harry, yeah. and Draco, for that matter. You know, Tom Felton, we haven't heard anything from him. I just think, can't wait. Can't wait. One other final thing. J.K. Rowling was recently honored by the South Bank Show Awards. She got a special award for outstanding achievement for her massive sales and getting children to read. And we saw some videos and new photos of her. She was presented with the award by Lord Richard Attenborough, who is fabulous. And he had some really, really nice comments about Jill. Although he was funny because he said he's the only person that was never offered the role in a movie, and he said, well, and then Joe joked, well, you know, Michael Gambon's going to have an accident or something, so Lord Attenborough could be in the film, which was hysterical. And like all the people are like, yes, yes. You know, it's funny. Go, Joe. Way to stir up the fandom. Way to go.
Yeah, for real.
It's really nice. But we have a really nice collection of video and photos of Joe, who look really fabulous. She had this great, like, I don't know what you call it, paisley print overcoat on.
Looks like kind of Asian looking.
Well, she's always looking fabulous.
Wow, she looks rocking, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
This is Joe.
Very glam. Yeah. Very glam. Yeah. Very wonderful.
The rock star.
But we're all just...
All right, so...
Yes.
So, okay.
Rock on.
As we said before, we're here with our friend Lisa DeGroot, who is otherwise known as Quest author on our site and on our forums. Mm-hmm. Lisa, tell us a little bit about your books. What kind of books are they?
Well, surprisingly enough, they're fantasy.
Yay.
Imagine that. And it's really interesting that we've been talking a lot about Deathly Hallows and Order of the Phoenix and good and evil, because that's a major premise of my books, is good versus evil. And while in the Harry Potter world, Harry is doing everything he can to destroy Voldemort, in my world and in my books, evil is something that you have to learn to live with, and it's something that you have to maintain a balance with. So my books are more about maintaining a balance between good and evil so that you always have more on the side of good than on the side of evil. Friendship is certainly a common theme between the two, because my books are all about the friendships that you make and protecting each other and helping each other.
What's the first one about?
Actually, the first one's called Oracle Quest, and it actually started in 1989 as a short story for my best friend, Katie. I was moving to San Diego, and I wrote her a short story. And my older sister, who is also an author, throughout the next decade was always like, you've got to write that as a full-length novel. It's really good. And she actually sent me the first Harry Potter book and said, this woman stole a lot of your ideas. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, she has griffins. I'm like... Okay, so I have griffins in my book, and she has Gryffindor. It's not the same thing. Trust me, Susan, it's not the same thing. But she's like, but it's written a lot in the style that you wrote yours, and I think you'd like it. And that's what got me hooked on Harry Potter. But I really was encouraged to start rewriting Oracle Quest by her and by some other friends that I've met actually on a now-defunct Harry Potter forum, who said, you write really well, you should write. Mm-hmm. So I took Oracle Quest, and I basically made it into a full-length novel, and I realized partway through that this could be a series, and I kind of recrafted the world, and it really just literally took off from there. And the first book is about a girl who is pulled from our world, which is called the World Dimension, to another dimension called the Land, and the Land has been recently invaded by evil. It had never had evil within its borders before, and it doesn't know how to fight evil. And everybody who's pulled from the world dimension has a special gift in the land. And Katie's gift is that she's an oracle, which is one of the most powerful beings that there is in the entire grid system.
Yeah. Were you influenced, like, after you became a Harry Potter fan, were you influenced to go and, like, detail your worlds? Like Joe has these, you know, famous volumes of things. Did you do it to that extent? I mean, if you have 20 of these things kind of, like, mapped out.
They kind of grew organically. It was very, very interesting how this world grew. And I knew I had the basic premise of there's a grid. And in my mind, I always imagined it like the old pegboard that your dad had in the garage that he would hang the tools on. And each one of those little holes was a grid. The grid was a dimension. And each of those dimensions was separate from the other dimensions. And that kind of grid framework, that solid framework, really was the master behind my world that I built. And some things grew as I wrote the books. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. And if I'm going to have that in this book, I'm going to need to make sure that I place it earlier. So in my editing process, I find that I'm doing a lot more of that layering. But because as I wrote the books, I kept copious notes, I think that instead of writing all the notes beforehand and then writing the books, my notes are happening at the same time that I write the books. So that's very interesting to me. And I don't know that I've met any other author that has done it that way, and I don't know that I recommend it. But for me, it's worked. For me, it's worked.
Cool. I like the way the story, for those who haven't read it, we do have them available in our shop, and they're really quite good. And I like the first one, like how you took her from this opening, you know, like she's like a regular character, like a girl post, like college, and, you know, and then all of a sudden she's like in my, she meets this guy who's kind of like Dumbledore, you know, this wizard. And I just thought that was a lovely scene. And then, you know, she's transported. So she wasn't like vacuumed, like zapped off into like, you know, a spaceship or anything. And I just thought it was really cool how you brought these worlds in. And then at the end, it's really pretty cool too. So.
Oh, I love the ending. The fairy tales, you know, it's a great story. And
it is.
I have to say my friend Katie read that book throughout the 90s, and every once in a while she would call me and say, you know, I reread my short story again and it just made me feel better. And that's pretty much all that I want from my books. I want people to read them and gain a little bit of understanding about themselves. But I have always been intrigued by the ordinary becoming the extraordinary.
I was just saying, well, you could correlate that, though, to the Harry Potter books, like you were talking about how the ordinary things still apply. I mean, here's Harry, who has been blessed with his extraordinary talents, and yet it's his common sense a lot of times that ends up in normal things that end up saving the day. And that's what I liked about your characters too, that do that. And it's interesting. I like it.
Well, thank you. I have fun with them.
I do want to know though, did Katie have her own Stephen in real life? Can you give me
Actually, she did. She met and married the most wonderful man about 5 years ago, and they are blessed with a beautiful daughter now. And it is, yeah, she did find her prince, and it's hysterical that his physical description is almost dead on to the prince in the book.
And is that an accident?
No. I mean, she called me. They had been corresponding by email, and she called me and said, I'm going to meet this guy that I've been corresponding with. And I'm like, all right, be careful. It's internet friends. Yeah, I'm one to talk. But, but seriously.
Yeah.
But she went and she met him, and they fell in love. And when she called me and said, I am head over heels for this guy, but you're going to die when you see his picture. And she sent me his picture. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. He is a dead-on ringer for the Prince of the Land. The curly black hair, the blue eyes, very tall. I was like, oh, that is just, that's sick. There's something wrong with me.
I love that she saves him.
Yeah.
That's right. Girl power. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I have to tell you, when somebody goes to the land and then they come back to the world dimension, they're known as protectors of the land. And I love my protectors. I think they're fabulous. But my boy protectors, I adore. But my women protectors, they really can kick some serious butt. They can. And I just love that. And I love that they are strong women in their own right. And that's important to me because I wrote these books in a lot of ways for my children as well, so that they would know who I am. And that's one of the lessons that I want them to learn.
What a great thing for them to have, you know, in 100 years when you're not, you know, next to them anymore.
Absolutely. I think they'll learn a lot about me and who I was as a person. And I have to tell you, my daughter did her book report in November last year on Oracle Quest at school.
Aww.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is. Cool. Awesome. Did they badger you for like, okay, tell us what's going to happen?
Actually, they do. My son really wants to read them. I'm asking him to wait another year. I just got my personalized license plates in the mail this week. Excuse me. And they say the seer. is now my license plate on my car. And the Seer of the Land is a character in the book. So they know so much about them. They know about the land trees. They draw me land trees constantly. They're really absolutely adorable about it. They'll hear a song on the radio and they're like, oh, Mom, that's a Quest song. You write to me when you're writing, you play that song. So they know all this stuff. Aww. And it's fun that they share that with me. And I think it has given us, a way to communicate with each other and talk about things and growing up.
Right. Well, Lisa, listen, Lisa's going to be around to talk Potter with us for the rest of the show. Lisa, where can people buy your books?
They can actually go to my website, which is www.thequestbooks.com.
Cool.
And they will have links there to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iUniverse. They all have them. And actually, they're available in regular book form, and they're also available in ebook, which is an option that a lot of people like. And poke around the website. It's a lot of fun. We have a forum that the characters actually come out and play. So if you like Katie, she may come out and talk to you on the forum if you're on the forum posting questions and stuff. So it's a lot of fun. It's a whole lot of fun.
Cool. Well, that does it for now. We're going to go and jump right into Phoenix Files.
There you go.
Welcome to Phoenix Files. That's my imitation of Dumbledore saying welcome to Hogwarts, only we're not talking about Dumbledore, we're talking about the DA, sort of, in this segment, and Hermione.
I'm not talking about Dumbledore.
Are we? No. Well, this is the segment where we take a closer look at the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix film. We're taking a little bit at each time, and this time we're going to be talking about the DA and Neville and that mysterious room of requirement and all kinds of good things. We are joined with Lisa. Hello again, Lisa.
Hello.
And of course, Melissa and John are here, too.
Howdy, howdy.
I'll be happy.
Aren't we all always talking about Dumbledore?
Dumbledore.
I don't know. He's just so intriguing.
Dumbledore. Well, you said that, Melissa, reminded me of Potter Popper Pals. Dumbledore.
Don't start me singing that again.
Dumbledore.
All right, so
okay.
We left off. And the kids just had their DA meeting, all excited to get going with it, and they decide to have it in the Room of Requirement, which is our first glance of the Room of Requirement in this movie. So I would suppose a nice place to start is, what did you guys think of how they portrayed the Room of Requirement? Was it kind of what you thought, all those mirrors and everything?
It was close, but I thought it was a little bit more dirty than I had envisioned it.
Really?
A little more cobwebby than I would have imagined. And I think that having all those mirrors around, while it kind of is a dance studio vibe, could be kind of dangerous with flying shards of glass once people start having spells that go awry. So,
Bombardias!
Boom! Yeah. Shrapnel is never good.
Maybe they're enchanted.
No.
Maybe they're like hurricane glass or something, or they're like enchanted not to shatter or something, because that would be kind of dangerous. And I wonder if spells like will reflect
off of
like light. That would be very dangerous.
Like in Link, when
ricocheting
you use a mirror
spells,
to...
That's straight, yeah. Stupefy goes bouncing off the wall until it hits somebody.
Do you ever play Adventures of Link? You use the spell to like bounce the spells back to the mages and they... Okay, I'm a geek.
Yeah.
I love no.
And that's a surprise.
That's okay.
Sometimes it just shines through like all silver, like, okay.
Yeah. It does, but you know, that room, I guess they had it mirrors to make it like kind of like mysterious and bigger and like, you know, how it's supposed to change or something. I guess, I know from a filmmaker's point of view, I don't know how you would go about conceptualizing them. With Lisa, it wasn't quite what I expected, but at the same time, I thought it was kind of cool, but I don't know if I wanted it to be also like, you know, the Love Shack room with all the mirrors. It just kind of flipped me out a little
bit. You know what I didn't love about this is that the Room of Requirement, as we read it in the books, is very wholly changed. When it used to be a practice room, the walls changed, there are books on the walls, there's
right.
all the things they might need, there's there's cushions. This is like you found a big room.
Right.
Yeah.
And what do we need it to be right now? We just need it to be a big room.
Right.
Okay.
And
it's less
less wholly done.
And it didn't have
it
the books.
It's kind of boring.
You know, I expected the books. I expected the cushions. I kind of envisioned a wood panel room for some reason, and it just was a little bit different. I did like how the columns didn't completely go down. I thought that was an interesting effect.
That magical, this needs to be taller or bigger, we can't find it, the columns thing. They just didn't seem to bring the character of the room alive. They didn't seem interested in showing us what the room kind of actually was. There's so many opportunities to show things appearing out of nowhere. Harry says, you know, oh, we're going to need cushions. There should be cushions blossoming out of nowhere.
Right.
You know, it would be such a cool effect, too.
Well, I wasn't expecting either the big, I'm not sure if it's in this scene, but the big dummy practice, dummy Death Eater dummy practice thing target. That slipped me off.
The DE bot.
Just kind of a little bit.
I kind of thought we would have seen maybe the room actually do the transformations at some point, like when they're walking into it. Because maybe it's the product of reading too much fan fiction or what, but like this room could turn into anything. I mean, it turns into something like, how do they describe it? Like almost like a cathedral or something with rows and rows of trinkets and things when they're trying to find the Horcrux and Deathly Hallows and everything. Like this room can give you any size, any kinds of guts inside of it. And it just seemed very boring and throughout the whole movie.
And I wonder if when we see it for six people and it's like full of junk and stuff, will people just think that now just it's become full of junk?
Right.
Or that it's just showing us one facet of itself? They'll probably think it's just become full of junk.
Yeah, unless they show like some kind of transformation or something, which would be cool. But, I don't know. Mm. I guess they figured it was unnecessary and expensive.
I guess the one thing about that beginning part of that scene that bothered me the most, though, was that once again, Hermione was, as she has been used in the movies throughout, became like the voice of explanation. This is the room of requirement. This is what it does. And that kind of bothered me a little bit, but I understand it had to be done, but it always seems to be Hermione who gets on the teachy voice about those kinds of things.
Yeah. Neville, you found the room of requirement.
What did you guys think of that? What did you think about Neville finding it? What do you guys think about that? I thought it was kind of, you know, I mean, obviously since they didn't have Dobby, but I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, are we supposed to assume that this is the first time that any of them have ever found it, though? Because how would they, I mean, Harry had to have seen it.
Yeah.
Or at least known about it to the point where he was one that was going to know how to find it.
No.
For Neville? Why
they've
Neville?
They've never been in need of a room like that before, so if they are all walking around being in need of a room, and Neville is the one to walk by the area first, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But Neville, I sort of like it. Knowing what we know about Neville now in that room, he gets it. He's the man.
Yeah, he is the man.
Yeah.
You know? That's what they say in Seven. Neville's the man. Yes, he is. So I'm okay with that.
I kind of like how they had the door, the way it appeared in and out, you know, as part of the wall. We have a really kind of cool, this kind of sidetrack thing, but there's, and in our galleries, we have the making of, if you got the DVD, they showed how they made that scene of the squares kind of opening up for that. And it's really pretty interesting how they shot that. So that's kind of a fun thing. But I wasn't sure how they were going to make those doors kind of appear, but it was kind of cool. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys think of how, you know, crazy intense Filch and Umbridge were trying to catch them this whole time?
It's a sick love, Filch and Umbridge.
Oh, it's disgusting. I can't watch that part where he gets
I'll go to the half of there. I thought it was
no, they're
comedic
a perfect
acting,
couple.
Actually.
Yeah.
Is this when he's sitting there? He's sitting there eating his sandwiches, right?
He's got a lawn chair out eating tuna fish.
And the pustule.
Waiting for something to happen.
Oh,
I can't. Don't mention. I can't. Don't. I can't. It makes sense.
Part of George's candy.
If at this point she's got the school wired, then then it's the one thing she can't control. It would make sense that it would drive her completely wild, you know.
Yeah.
But. Yeah.
And then, I mean, this was also part of the montage, I think, when she dubs the Slytherins to be all the Inquisitorial Squad.
Yep.
Oh, right, right.
And I do think there's a lot of really neat little subtle shots in that montage. I think that some of the, like I said, the physicality of it with the room parting and Neville standing alone in the room and he kind of ducks out, like he doesn't want to be seen, and Luna skipping and all of those things, it really just kind of highlighted the characters in a way that I thought was kind of nice for them, for the middle of the series, to kind of be reminded. You know, that's the montage that has when Ron and Hermione, and she stupefies him, and he's like, oh, I let her do that. Yeah, it's good manners. Good form.
Right, that's so funny.
Well, that's right. I mean, we kind of went over it too quickly, but this was the first time we've really seen Harry, you know, come into his own in the whole teaching aspect, too. This was their first lesson in the DA, and just to see everybody respond so well to him, I tried to compare it to, like, you know, like, at my school, if there was one kid who was really good at something, he was going to tell the whole class as a club how to do it. I can't imagine everybody just going with it without any kind of, you know, sarcasm or disbelief. They all just respect and are in awe of him, I guess, after what they heard about his fourth year.
I love when he says, you know, and this wasn't even in the book, and I really enjoyed it. No, all the other great wizards of history started out just like us.
Right.
Students. If they can do it, why not us? Like, it's a nice little thing to see as Harry starts becoming a leader. But he cottons onto it real quick.
Yeah, he does. And I like that change from just being one of the kids to being that person who's going to have to lead. And I think it's actually a sign of the comfort level between the trio that Hermione and Ron don't automatically try to share that with him. They do take that step back. And in a lot of friendships of that age, I don't know that that would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Harry, you know, he saved the world a few times.
Just a few.
Do we see the floating, mysterious Colin Greevy replacement boy in the scene?
Yeah.
That
well,
later
on, I think closer to Christmas, but...
But he pops up here, right?
Well, what was their first lesson? The first lesson?
Stupefied.
They tried to do the Expelliarmus, weren't they?
Yeah,
and Neville couldn't get it the whole time.
Right.
20 minutes into the movie, he finally gets it or something.
Well, it's actually from the stupefied. Beginning to the end of this whole montage. It just seems to be the whole progression through the fall and into the Christmas break.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember the day that Warner Brothers released that first still of them standing in that room. And I just remember, like, being so excited just to see the DA, you know. And then for us to get to see this in the movie, it was, you know, it was better than I thought, and in other parts it wasn't, but it was just really exciting to see them actually, like, doing the spells, and you think, okay, I could be me, you know, and I just thought that was, so that for, you know, that was really pretty exciting. Although I kept looking for, like, you know, like Michael Corner and all the, like, the, you know, and they call him the stringy Slytherin guy or whatever, they didn't give him a name and stuff, you know, and it's, I kept, like, looking, trying to watch it every time I watch a movie, looking to see who all the different, like, minor characters were, you know, looking for the Hufflepuffs as usual, but, you know.
Were there any Hufflepuffs in the DA?
Yes, there were. Couple unnamed ones.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely someone who looks like Zachariah Smith.
I'm not up on my Hufflepuff trivia, I guess.
Hey, man, Susan Bones and Ernie McMillan.
Right, right.
You know?
Of course,
come on.
Those sound familiar, absolutely.
You know.
Mm, you got me.
Yeah, well, come to me about, and we'll talk about Hufflepuff, okay?
Oh, I know.
Okay. But, yeah, so that was pretty cool scene, though. Although, we saw when you were talking back to when you were talking about the Inquisitional Squad.
Inquisitorial.
Was that Pansy Parkinson, or was that, I mean, was she in there?
No, it was some random. They didn't cast Pansy for
just
5.
Just random.
Yeah. They're casting Pansy for 6. Yeah. I think we just found out who she is, actually.
Yeah.
Because she's actually, like, a real character. So, as opposed to 5, she's kind of in the background.
Like walks through.
That girl who played Pansy in movie 2 is no longer around.
The Pansy that shall not be.
That was number 3, wasn't it? Someone
was it 3?
Saw Pansy?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's 3.
Well, have we about covered it?
I think this is about it.
I think we could nail that into the ground. Next week we have the moment many ladies were waiting for, is when Harry gets his first kiss with a certain Cho Chang. And the the photo of Cedric does not approve in the mirror, which I love. And
nothing
and then,
like that guy
you know,
humor.
And then Harry goes back and tells Ron and Hermione all about it, which was some pretty fun moments.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Awesome.
Kissing next
cool.
week.
Cool beans.
Well, let's push on. And I never know how to move on to the next segment.
Go to the next segment. Move on.
And we're moving on.
And away we go.
And it's time for Deathly Hallows, bits by bits, bits at a time. We left you last week with Chapter 6, The Ghoul in the Pajamas, Part 1. But we have a whole second half to this chapter, which pretty much, I think, deals with the trio and Harry. Well, I guess the trio includes Harry. The trio are talking about the trip and the Horcruxes, and Harry's all like, no, you can't come with me, and then they all tell him
Harry's like, didn't we do this
how many
last
things
year?
They right. did yeah. to get ready for this.
And Harry's and, all, you know, they're all, look, we did the whole conversation by the side of the lake. Did you get your ears cleaned or something?
Yeah.
It's like it happens once a movie.
Yeah, it's true. True.
I'm too dangerous, Ty.
Dangerous. You can't come with me. But we have to, otherwise it wouldn't be much of a fun book. It'd just be Harry going off by himself.
It'd just be you and your inner monologue, which sucks, exactly. Because you just write Sirius or go to the Owlery.
Or we'd be back in book 5 and you're just screaming at everybody.
Exactly. I was surprised by one thing in this chapter, is because I always thought that the ghoul in the attic was some kind of euphemism.
Right.
It wasn't actually there. It was just like, oh, that's just Molly and Arthur being noisy. Oh, come on. They have so many damn kids.
We can't
know. I mean, you'd think that they would have developed some kind of thing over the years like that.
Oh, dear.
Oh, don't listen to that. That's just a ghoul. It has two
well,
voices.
Well, the clanking chains is a little scary then.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they have to, after all those years.
I'm telling you.
I don't know.
All righty.
I am not participating in this conversation.
The ghoul exists.
No, he does
bad.
Exist. John, no way.
This is our R-rated podcast.
Yeah.
No.
And he's smelly.
He's smelly.
Is that the ghoul or is that the spatergoid, though?
Well, I think that might be the ghoul, and then the pus is the spatergoid.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And
spatter, whatever.
What's the difference between a ghoul and a ghost? Do we know this? Anything about that? I mean,
he didn't mention that it was transparent or anything or iridescent. It looks like it's actually a physical form.
Yeah. Like you could touch it, put clothes on it.
And it doesn't seem to be able to talk
make it at all.
Yeah. This one just like drools and
you can brush its hair.
It's like Barbie from
Wizards
everywhere.
Exactly.
Well, I got curious and I looked up what a ghoul is online, and it's supposedly an evil demon that feeds on human flesh after it robs their graves.
Yikes.
So is that a good thing to have
in
your attic?
It was in the Weasley house.
That's pretty bad.
That's what I'm thinking.
I'm guessing J.K. Rowling's
stuff
is
just inspired by them and made her own type of ghoul.
Based on.
I mean, how does this thing live in an attic, though? What does it eat? What does it do?
Are
all
there
day?
Other Weasleys we don't
does
know about?
Does it go out and hunt?
It's not a hunter-gatherer
like,
ghoul.
You know, a disfigured child the Weasleys had at one
that
point.
Just,
and
yeah,
in the attic.
In.
Out
he's
of
like
shame.
A lost being that just happened to inhabit the top part of the burrow. You know, he's part of like a character kind of thing. He's not like a hunter-gatherer going to go out. Maybe he goes out and hangs out with the gnomes in the garden, but I don't think that he goes.
It's like Jacob Marley hangs
out with
up
the gnomes.
There.
They have quite the party in the Weasley garden. Come
maybe,
on.
Maybe, you never
ghoul
know.
Heck yeah.
For real.
Too right.
I don't know.
I love it.
Too right.
So.
Brit boy.
So, the funny part about that, too, was that it was Fred and George and Arthur who helped to make this whole transformation to make him more passable as Ron. Which, if I was Ron, I wouldn't be very amused at being compared to a
I thought it was pretty smart, actually, on Ron's part. You know, I mean, if that was his idea to come out with it, or whoever did, that was a really good idea. I mean, because they have to explain his absence somehow. I thought that was pretty clever.
Yeah, nobody wants to go there's somebody with a spolter guy or whatever.
Got the cooties.
Well, I mean, what Harry says about it is that he's sure that ghouls were usually... Oh, crap. I'm dropping my book. Hang on a second. Ghouls were usually slimy and bald, which is to answer our other question, rather than distinctly hairy and covered in angry purple blisters. But then Ron says,
yeah,
he's me, see? And Harry's like, no.
Yeah.
No. He's not you.
He's all proud of
yeah.
their creation.
He's just right on top of that whole concept, isn't he, of hiding.
Yeah. Well, when you think about, you know, that's comparing Ron's effort here to all of Hermione's efforts, just we're trying to organize the whole dang trip and get all the books ready to go.
Yeah.
Speaking of books.
Most important book?
Well, yeah. The Darkest of Ours, is that what it's called? Something
yeah.
similar to that. And she gets it, she finds out all about Horcruxes by performing an accurate
spell. I mean,
spell.
I thought that was really interesting that, and I kind of thought that the Secrets of the Darkest Art, that Dumbledore kind of like prearranged that, like or some sort of thought,
yeah.
you know? I don't know. It just seemed kind of convenient that all of a sudden
Absolutely.
This book, a key book, flies into her hands. I don't know.
I think he was very thoughtful in that he thought that at one point one of them would think to try to find more about it, and so he wouldn't go about making it entirely impossible to figure out.
No, I agree with that completely. I think it was a complete setup, and that he knew that Hermione would figure something out like that.
Yeah.
But when
and you wonder if he did an Enchanted to only respond to the trio.
Yeah, because, I mean, there surely had to have been other people that wanted to know about that book, you know, or about Horcruxes, or, you know, I mean, if, you know, why couldn't Voldemort summon it? I mean, he already knows how, but why wouldn't he want to have it hanging around in his Voldemort library, you know?
I think it's kind of a funny thing with these books that we don't really see, out of the whole school of people, too many other people get into trouble, unless it's Harry or somebody Harry knows. You'd think that... that there would be people trying to sneak into the restricted section other than Harry.
But it just astounds me how on the tip of the thread of a needle, whatever, this mission hinged.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody closed a window, they would have never had that info.
Yeah.
A helpful house elf
could
have derailed the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, so many factors could have just sent the whole thing careering off the rails, which I guess makes a good... You know, adventure. It's in the script.
I mean, how strong is the Accio spell, though? I mean, when they Accio'd the brooms and Phoenix, they blasted off the chains
right.
and they came through the dungeons
the
or wherever they were. Would a window have stopped the book?
Well,
I don't
think
so.
I don't think so, too. But, you know, if we go by the premise that maybe Dumbledore had arranged it, then maybe, you know, his force would have given energy. But I always thought that Accio had a lot to do with the strength of the wizard. I mean, Fred and George, let's face it, are pretty powerful wizards. I mean, they're pretty creative, you know, and Harry certainly is. So I don't know. Maybe.
I just thought that the finding out how to kill the Horcruxes would be something that was a little bit harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Than that. Or it came at a more... set up moment in the plot.
Yeah.
You know, but
I think this way cut out 100 pages out of the book, though.
Yeah, exactly.
They had to go on a quest to get the book, and then a quest to start the quest. It's like,
I mean,
and the best is that Hermione...
My thought when I first read it was, okay, so why didn't back in Goblet of Fire Harry do that when he needed to learn how to breathe underwater?
Well, not Hermione.
Underwater spell or something.
Yeah. Well, Hermione didn't think of it.
There you go.
You know?
True.
The best is that Hermione's all remorseful, like, oh, you know, I feel
so
bad. You know, I feel bad for reading them. It's not like anybody else wanted them. And Ron just goes, can you hear any of us complaining?
Yeah.
So, she's being all Hermione, and Ron just, his humor is just...
You know, but then...
Spoke about the basilisk.
Yeah, the basilisk, right? Because, I mean, we got that explanation right away about, you know, what it is and why the fang, you know, and the diary and that came up. It's like Joe was, like, listening to the fandom for, like, the last 2 years after Haploid Prince and, like, tried to put it in there. Like, okay, here. You know?
Right.
Just kind of...
Well, he says it's you can kill a Horcrux with basilisk venom. Ron's like, oh, good thing we have this large supply of basilisk fangs. I was wondering what we were going to do with all of them.
Yeah. Have them in a little Ziploc bag.
Exactly. Yeah, a Ziploc bag made out of adamantium,
yeah.
right? You know.
Yeah.
So So
I love it.
So what else happens here? The Flores de Liqueurs arrive.
God, they're annoying.
I was actually kind of relieved that they were nice. After all, you know, I was afraid they were going to be snotty and look down their noses at the beloved borough, but they were pretty, you know, they settled in pretty quick and seemed pretty appreciative of everything that the Weasleys had done. So I was kind of glad about that.
And you think it was genuine?
I do.
I do.
Mm-hmm. They didn't seem hoity. They seemed helpful. I think Flora maybe got it. How if they're so pleasant and nice and they don't have heirs the way... How did Flora get them?
Well, but Flora's she's a Vila, right? I mean, her mother is not a Vila.
Yeah. I guess not. But then her mother's name is Apolline, which probably says a little bit about her status.
Oh, yeah.
What's that mean?
It's the female version of Apollo. Right. The god of the sun.
Yeah.
She's probably all shiny.
I thought Apollo was like one of the gods of war or something.
I think Apollo's the sun. Now you have me in a crisis of confidence, and I have to Google.
I was just going over...
You just like to mess me up.
Greek mythology with Samantha.
Light and the sun, so...
Light and the sun.
I don't know, but who's the guy like from French films or I can tell him, Monsieur, and he popped his little hand, he's like a little French maître d'hôtel.
Pepe Le
Pew? Yes, that's him! And when I was reading that, that's what popped in my head when I was reading about Papa Delacour, of Fleur's family or whatever they are.
Mama, Papa! She comes flying
exactly.
down.
Exactly, thank you, Melissa. That's exactly what
I was thinking more like a Swedish
chef. Ding-a-ding-a-ding.
Or the chef in the Little Mermaid. I love that movie. Okay.
Oh, we're such geeks. I'm sorry. That's so funny.
And then we have just... Sorry.
So Lisa's like, oh, you can't
start
crazy.
Getting a Little Mermaid. It'll be just an hour and a half of... Okay. Then we have preparation for the wedding. Pretty boring stuff. The house looks great. It's so clean. It's shiny. Everything's clean.
More of Mrs. Weasley being annoying about all the dang chores and not letting
them spend any time together to make any kind of plan.
Think that she was like suspecting they were involved in some kind of like romantic relationship with each other.
Who? You could.
Who?
The trio.
Who are you, Alfonso Cuarón?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's like it just reminds me of like. Two teenagers going into the bedroom and mom being all like, keep the door open. You know, like...
I don't want to have you telling any more than some kissing. In there now.
Yeah.
I think she's a little more worried about them dying.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, there's that.
Well, yeah, that's the age.
John!
No!
I don't know.
No!
You're so strange.
So, but that was just like a real slice of life. Chapter. That's what I liked it. I loved the Weasley family, this whole series, and I love when they would go to the borough. And I from that point of view, I enjoyed the chapter and just the sense of like, what the hustle and bustle of like, you know, sweeping up the getting rid of the chickens and just that kind of like, you know, you have that image in your head and it's just it's funny. So from that point of view, I really liked that chapter.
Well, I think that actually wraps up the chapter.
Cool.
Does it not? I believe it does.
I believe so.
We will have next week. The chapters 7, The Will of Albus Dumbledore, which is one of the more exciting chapter titles, I think, since chapter 1's title, at least to me anyway.
Do you know the only chapter title I knew going into this book was The Life and Lies of Albus Dumbledore?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I remember
imagine
that.
Knowing nothing about the book but that.
Wow.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Oh. I miss what we didn't know. Okay, sorry.
On that happy note.
Tune in next week for the first half of Chapter 7.
And more Little Mermaid.
Welcome to Scribby 5, the 5-minute podcast of the Leaky Cauldron's premier essay project, Scribulous. I'm Laura, or Music Cows, and today I have with me two other editors, Erin, or Calpheus, on the boards.
Hi, guys.
And Beth, Looney Love, on the boards.
Hi!
So, anyone out there still got your wand in a knot? Well, if so, you'll be very relieved because today we're talking about an essay in issue 21 called Still Got Your Wand in a Knot? Wand Lore and the Elder Wand Examined by the Rotfang Conspiracy 07.
Yes, now this is a deep essay. Our short segment here isn't going to do it justice because of the complexity of the issue, but that won't stop us from trying, will it, girl?
No.
Oh, no, no.
So this essay really explores the Elder Wand, and it takes it from the words that are used to describe it all the way to its entire purpose in the series.
The author basically concludes that the Elder Wand itself is very important to the outcome of the series and to the overall moral message of Deathly Hallows.
Right, that's right. The author does say that, and it's interesting because it seems to me like, especially on the forums, I've been reading a lot of people saying that they don't feel like the moral themes in the Harry Potter series are clear. And I think it's interesting because this author does feel that there are a lot of clear moral themes, and he especially talks about chivalry as fundamental to the series, and I have to say that I agree with him.
Right. I don't find it morally ambiguous at all. You just have to do as the Malfoys do.
Right, Laura. Well, I'll remember that, too. But seriously, though, I found our heroes powerfully chivalrous, and, you know, there are several key things that Rotfang brought up that we can touch on here. One of them is the terms used by Rowling to describe wands.
Yeah, Erin, terms are definitely central to his reading of the role of wands in the Harry Potter series. Allegiance, disarming, conquering, mastering, all very medieval terms that evoke thoughts of knights and chivalry. In wand lore, the historical context for the use of the term allegiance is discernibly medieval. A wizard masters the wand. The conquering of the wand and the disarming of the previous owner all indicate a violent and hierarchical context in which the parameters for wand lore have been set.
And not only that, Beth, but he speaks in the essay about the importance of the Elder Wand as a parable. He wrote, "The Elder Wand is then a supreme paradox. For the true master has to somehow survive without being defeated, despite its being a magnet for violence, and then only in order to destroy its power forever."
Right. And you know, Laura, that was really a big thing for me. It was kind of a revelation when I thought about that, because I think in order to understand what happened in the complex Deathly Hallows endgame, which we were all sort of trying to figure out for months after we finished the book, we had to kind of accept that Rowling depicts power through this series as utterly self-defeating. And for a long time, I felt that she was showing love defeating evil. But I now realize that in so many ways, she was showing evil defeating itself.
That's pretty deep, Erin.
Yeah.
So that would mean that this instrument that Lord Voldemort thought would save him and allow him to bring down Harry really turned out to be the means for his demise. Pretty brilliant, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah. And not only that, but Rotfang has something to say about the Elder Wand and Snape.
Oh, God.
Of course. Everything comes back to Snape.
Everything's about Snape.
That's right.
Right, Erin. Rotfang has an explanation in his essay for why Dumbledore would fail to tell Snape about the wand. But if you want to know it, you have to go to his essay in issue 21 at Scribulous at www.scribulous.com.
That's right. Okay, great job, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Oh, it's the end.
It's the end
of another show.
So sad.
How many more shows do we have left now, guys?
448,000.
Oh, no. You know what's funny to me is that I do my calendar on Google, and I have all my classes blocked out, and I've got my graduation date in there coming up in like 5 or 6 weeks.
Ooh, cool.
I've got everything in that calendar, but you have the repeat function on there. So when you say like, you know, you put in a thing and say like every week or whatever until this date, it also has an option to go like no end date in sight. So I have recording podcast in there.
No end in sight.
And every Thursday and forever is like on my, like every single page. It's like, oh, this is lovely. Yeah.
That's not a bad thing.
I'm so excited.
It's not a bad thing at all. I'm happy about
it's
that.
Not. It's a great thing.
No, we're very happy about it. We'll be here soon. We got plenty. Hey, we got 3 movies left.
And a theme park.
Maybe.
Oh,
and the theme park. Jeez, man.
I'm so ready for that.
I can't wait. I'm hearing over and over from everybody who has an informed opinion about it, have been just saying how wonderful this park is going
to
be.
Well, I have to tell you, when it opens, the following summer is my 20th wedding anniversary, and I've already told my husband,
aww,
we are getting remarried at Hogwarts.
Mm. Oh, that's so romantic. That's so cool. Magically beautiful. I love it.
You're invited, Sue. You're invited.
I wonder if, will they rent the hall out, do you think? That'd be so cool if they rented out the
hall.
They're
going to have a chapel or something there. They're going to have to. And I don't care if I'm standing on the lawn in front in a gown and, you know, declaring my undying love to my husband after 20 years and vowing for a couple 20 more. I'll do it.
Well, now, would you be in a gown or would in a robe?
You know what? I'll probably be in my robe. I have commissioned some robes that actually are black, gold, and ruby, so that I will be kind of questy and I will be Hogwarty at the same time.
That's awesome. Can you
and
imagine
actually,
if they did that, though? I mean, people would just go mad. They would just
They're going to have to. And my husband, who is so straight-laced and has never read the Harry Potter books, has not even read my books, to be perfectly honest, other than the first one, because he's not a reader. He's just not a reader, but he totally supports me 110%. He kind of looks at me and goes, you're serious, aren't you? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm serious. We're getting remarried at Hogwarts. And he's like,
wait till you show him the dress
code. Okay. My kids are all over it. I have a Ravenclaw and a Gryffindor, and they're all over it. So,
sweet.
Nice. hey, John.
Hey, what?
I want to play a game from now on.
Okay.
I have an idea.
Kind of
I was watching television, and, you know, television.
I enjoy television.
Anyway, they have this show called Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Yeah.
And I was just curious. How many people think that they're smarter than John Noe?
Not very many.
That would be good.
I think we should do it. I think we should have people call up, and we should give a canon question, and we should see who gets the answer first.
Are you smarter than a Horcrux?
Like some kind of like question like, what turns off the sonorous charm?
What would that be?
To which I would say, Knox.
No,
no, it doesn't.
Wrong.
That's the light one.
Quiet.
Dope.
No, this is gonna be a fun game.
That would be
it's
fun.
It's a quietus. I'm not dumb.
I don't know how the logic of it would work, but I think we should play.
I'm totally up for it. Can I answer? Can I call him?
Let's do it. How about this? We'd have to call people out.
Okay.
And so if you want to be considered for Are You Smarter Than John Noe, just start sending us a number or a Skype name at which we can get you. You can do that at staff@podcast.com. And when it's time for that, we will just start calling you at random. First person to be there for our call gets to play.
That is so cool. People are loving that.
Sounds cool to me.
I love it. We had so much fun when we were on the PowerCast tour this summer about the Wizarding Duel. That was just like the blast. And then I remember the Columbus one when you and your brother-in-law were hysterical. Just the two of you.
That
was my favorite moment almost ever.
So funny.
Good time.
I have a personal shout-out to Chris from Alleycast. Thank you very much. And Jen, I was just on the show, and they were there, and I blathered for an hour about Hufflepuff and Wizard Rock, and it was...
They gave you an hour about Hufflepuff?
Well, pretty much, yeah. It was awesome.
Wow, it was very generous.
It was, but you know, Chris. She's a fellow puffer, but it was awesome, but I just wanted to thank you.
I also just want to say a quick, Alleycast just suffered a very hard loss. One of their staffers' mothers was trapped in a fire. She had multiple sclerosis and was trapped in a wheelchair, and unfortunately, because of this, did not make it out of a fire. And so our thoughts and prayers and hugs and everything are with them, and we hope that Megs is doing better and that the love and support that always comes with the Harry Potter community can make its way to her right now. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Very tragic.
No. So sorry to, you know, but yeah, you said Alleycast, so.
Yeah, no.
But I haven't listened
nice,
to it,
though.
So I can't wait to listen.
That's the one thing about this community. We support each other.
Weapon is love or something, right?
Absolutely.
Hogwarts is love,
okay,
baby. Harry's love.
Just as a quick reminder, we're going to be at Terminus in August. Lots of fun stuff coming, and I think some more related programming in the near future, so keep an eye out for that. Sue is head of house over there. She's,
Yes.
What's your house again?
Pompero.
Pompero. I still have to register. You know this?
What?
I have to register.
Uh-oh.
I know. It's terrible. I know.
Register.
I know. I know.
I registered, but I still don't know what house I'm in, so. And I registered last fall.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
You should email somebody about that, Lisa.
Yeah. I'm not allowed to do anything. I want to take this opportunity. I am not allowed to say, please put them in Pompero House. I have so many people that have said, Sue, we want to, they're being very kind, but I have no influence. I'm not allowed to influence at all. I mean, I got yelled at. Okay. So I'm being good.
You know, just as McGonagall can't handpick her students, the sorting hat stuff.
Oh, McGonagall totally handpicked. No, I'm kidding.
But you better be in my house. Let's just put it that way. I'll be very sorely if you're not.
I mean, if I was there and I didn't get sorted in the Sue's house, I'd probably call the cab for the airport home.
You won't. Although you could be just in Boo Boo's house. That's why I'm calling Boo Boo. Brian.
Boo-boo.
Brian is Brian from Creakle and Malfoy.
Oh, nice. Well, no doubt I'll be with the Slytherins. It's just how it works.
You know.
And to address what a lot of people have been asking about a Boston 2009 event that we mentioned in last year's.
I thought that was Joe coming to speak at Harvard.
Yes, there's that, except that that's in 2008. And just hang tight, the full and actual and non-accidental announcement on that will be coming in the next few weeks. So that's all we're saying about
and
that.
And it'll be worth your time, people. Just hang in there.
Absolutely.
Yay!
Keep your eye on the website for it to be covered with question marks floating across the screen.
Oh, dear God.
No! That's a big red herring again. A red fish or whatever that was.
Old time. So what we're talking about.
We were so stupid back then.
It was a good plan. It got people excited.
Yeah.
But it also destroyed our servers.
Pretty much.
So. All righty.
Well, I think... you guys, until next time.
Thanks, Elisa. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be Land Tree.
Keep each other safe.
Keep safe.
Good night. We've missed it.
W3.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now. If you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. Thanks to our Scooby 5 team, Aaron and Nina, and thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on podcast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit podcast.com.